Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your co-host, Vlad Sedler, here as always with Matthew Matty Wood Davis, and contrary to popular belief, your boy Vlad has not been Wally Pipped because Paul Spohr is, who graciously filled in for us last week, is not here this week. That means I still have my job, and here I am to talk some baseball with you, Matty. What's going on?
Yeah, excited to have you back. It was a bummer to miss you last week because Paul and I did give our verbal season, you know, end of the year awards and who's going to win the World Series, etc. But you do have yours available up at FTN Fantasy if people haven't read that or saw that yet, which was a really fun piece that we all put together at the staff and some people that pitched in on the draft guide, Jenny Butler and Phil Dussault as well. So we all made our bold predictions for 2022. And it was a lot of fun. So it was a bummer not to have you a part of that, but we're back and we're going to talk about the highs. We're going to talk about the lows and we're going to try and survive what has been going on this first, not even full week of baseball.
Yeah, that's the kind of the crazy part here. It hasn't even been a full week. Most teams haven't even played six games yet on the season. We're recording on the morning of Wednesday, April 13th. And yeah, I mean, I think I posted a couple of days ago how time has really, I guess, I don't know, how do you say it? Either it's either really slowed down or it's really sped up. But like to think that quite literally a month and 2 days ago, we weren't even sure that we were going to have baseball. A couple weeks ago, fast forward to a couple weeks ago, we were in Las Vegas drafting live. A week after that was the New York live drafts. And then even a week ago today, the regular season hadn't even started. So we were just about to get started. So yeah, I mean, this last week has really, I guess, it feels like a long time ago that the season has started, at least for me personally. But yeah, so much activity. We've already had two free agent bidding periods and just a lot of things to talk about and look into. I think for today, we want to sort of look at some of the storylines of this first week, some surprises, both on the positive and the negative, and then talk some injuries. And then, of course, looking into FAB for the following week, though we're recording on Wednesday. I think it's still a good time to be able to sort of look ahead to what people might be shopping for over the weekend. So let's kick things off with what everyone would probably assume would be the storyline, the Cleveland Guardians. These guys are incredible, at least what we've seen so far. The team expected to be basically like bottom five offensively. Wasn't really a fearsome lineup outside of Jose Ramirez and Franmil Reyes. Reyes hasn't been doing very much, but there's a guy, there's a kid, there's a man by the name of Stephen Kwan, who is now the rookie. They're now their number two hitter, and he's an absolute machine. 10 for 15 with 7 walks so far on the young season. And these Cleveland Guardians have scored 37 runs over the last 3 games. What's going on here with Kwan, with the Guardians, and where does he fit? I mean, where do you foresee him come the end of season?
Still on my fantasy rosters, that's for damn sure, because the plate discipline, batted ball, and contact skills are what we kind of clamor for, or some of us do. You know, we're able to find power in other department with other players in other profiles. And with somebody like this, if he's going to continue to hit at the top of the lineup, he's currently hitting second in between Miles Straw and Jose Ramirez. And Miles Straw is getting on base. Miles Straw can run. You already talked about, you know, Stephen Kwan just going just absolutely bonkers. He's leading the league with a 750 OBP. The Cleveland Guardians, I'm sorry, are leading the entire league in runs scored at 38. They're leading the entire league in on-base percentage at 376. And then behind them, you still have, you know, behind Jose Ramirez, you have Franmil Reyes, who is a complete bopper, and you have Amed Rosario, who has actually looked really good this year as well. And albeit it is early. So there's people that worry, you know, if it's early and they look bad, we might, you know, just kind of say that it's early and not worry. And then some people we might worry about. Each person or each team has a different landscape, but In regards to Stephen Kwan himself, I think that the style and skills that he provides is very sustainable.
Yeah. So what'll be interesting is they're going to finish up this quick two-game series with the Cincinnati Reds, and then they're going to run into, I wouldn't quite call them a buzzsaw. I think one of these guys are, but the San Francisco Giants pitching staff. And it'll be in Cleveland, which is a bit of a pitcher's park leaning, maybe sort of neutral, but Carlos Rodon, Anthony DeSclafani, and Alex Wood. So they'll run into those three guys over the weekend. At some point, you know, these guys are going to cool off, but a nice start for a first round pick, Jose Ramirez.
When I say sustainable, though, sorry, I don't want to leave this out. I don't mean sustainable like what he is currently doing sustainable. I just mean sustainable in regards when he does regress, it won't get so bad where he's either buried in the Guardians lineup or he's like completely, mm-hmm. you know, demoted to the minors. That's what I mean. I don't mean his current pace is sustainable. I hope I just want to make that clear in case people are thinking that I'm saying that he's going to be hitting for, you know, 600 or whatever.
Yeah. And what's a win? I mean, you get a guy that's going to end up hitting second for most of the season. I'm sure he'll hit some slumps and struggle a bit, but I mean, if you can legitimately hit over 300, yeah, score 80 plus runs, steal a few bases, hit a few home runs. And, there's something valuable there. I think it's, you know, especially in something like the batting average category, which, you know, we chase certain specific guys for something like that. I mean, even like a Michael Brantley, who we probably didn't project for more than 12 to 15 home runs this year, he was falling heavily in Vegas main events. I mean, a guy going 200, 240 was now going 240, 270 in main events, just kind of the way it shook out. Not a really sexy pick, but those guys are important to us, especially if guys that we have on our roster who accumulate a lot of plate appearances start off cold or have a bad batting average. These guys help balance that out, help negate that. Obviously, if you have a Wander Franco or Vladimir Guerrero, obviously something like that helps, but we could get hit by the bug of bad batting average early. So something we need to be careful about. But guess what though? Kwan doesn't even lead the league in batting average. I get it. It's only been 6 days. You know who it is, right? It's your boy.
Is it Ian Happ? Come on down.
Come on down. Yeah. Yeah. He missed one game. But nevertheless through, I think it was through three games, he was hitting 7 for 10, quite a streaky guy. Career batting average, is horrible. He's even been, you know, hitting kind of towards the middle bottom of the lineup. We've seen him, hit, you know, kind of an odd mix there with Chicago, but basically he is pretty much their cleanup hitter. I think for the most part, I think maybe against lefties, you might see him lower in the lineup, but is this a good sign for you or just something random?
It is a good sign. So we noticed that the Milwaukee Brewers in the first series against the Cubs had some issues putting away hitters, albeit some of that was their own, you know, doing with some command and control issues. But the Cubs have been putting the bat on the ball. They bring in Nick Madrigal last year. He was hurt. You're seeing, you know, lower strikeout rates, higher contact rates with them, better plate discipline for the entire team. That's also including Seiya Suzuki, who now has 3 home runs. And he's been awesome as well. And I, you know, it's no secret that I was in on Ian Happ. He was one of my highest rostered baseball players going into this fantasy baseball season. And you mentioned him hitting lower in the lineup. That was against a left-handed hitter or pitcher. I'm sorry. He's a switch hitter, and he does bode better against righties. So he does hit in the thick of the lineup. You mentioned him hitting cleanup. That'll be on the strong side of things against righties. And then he could hit a little bit lower when facing lefties. But if he continues to, you know, produce contact against lefties, then you're going to see him slide up just a little bit ahead of those guys you saw hitting higher than him yesterday when facing Jose Quintana of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then Seiya Suzuki, right? We were kind of just crap on this Cubs lineup. But if he's going to be the transition period looks like it's not going to be, you know, as bad as it was for some other players coming over from Japan or other countries. I think that both of these guys are going to potentially provide where players drafted them. Say Suzuki was being drafted in the main event anywhere from, I think the earliest we saw him was in the 7th round, but on average it was around, I think, round 10. And then Ian Happ sort of slipped a little bit after the news came out that he had the off-season procedure to have loose bodies removed from his elbow. And he slipped down from, I believe it was like round 12 and 13 in main events. So people were still in on both, obviously, at those at that draft capital. And I think that good things are going to come for those that bought in.
Yeah, and then what about Suzuki? Where do you see him hitting in the lineup over time? We basically have had Mick Madrigal hitting second against righties. He drops down in the lineup against lefties. Rafael Ortega usually won't be in the lineup against lefties, and then he'll lead off against the righties. And then Wilson Contreras has pretty much been settled in at, hitting second or third, depending if it's a lefty or righty. But at some point, does Suzuki move up? I mean, he's already gone from sixth to fifth. Is fourth next, or is he settled in at the fifth spot?
Yeah, I think he could move up. And could we potentially see maybe Ian Happ move up to the two spot and keep Wilson Contreras in the three hole and move, say, to the four spot? I think that there could be some flexibility there depending on how hot these guys get. I don't see either getting bumped down, though, right? Because of the overall landscape of the Cubs and the team talent, I think that both of those two, Happ and Suzuki, are just clearly the two best hitters on the team.
Let's talk about Wander Franco for a minute here.
Oh, okay.
All right. So he's another guy that was actually kind of very polarizing. I think people know he was going to be a good real life player. And we started to see a guy who I think in January we were seeing drafted basically towards the end of the fourth round, middle to end of fourth of 15 teamers. So you're talking like 50, 60 overall. And then come main event season, he'd been dipping down even further down that lineup. And of course, the concern being he's just 21. How much do we really value batting average, especially if he may not run very much, if he's not going to hit more than 20 home runs. But this dude looks like he's been playing in the league for a decade. Through four games, he's already had three hit games. It's pretty amazing. He's quite the enigma. He was already in projection systems, basically slotted to be among the league leaders in batting average. But like, what's his real ceiling in that regard? I mean, is he just somebody that if you were to put money on who's going to lead the majors in hitting, is this who the kind of the horse you get behind? And what's the ceiling there with the batting average?
Could he hit 330 this year? I don't know.
Sure.
So even before this, right, even last year, if we're going to scrap last year, we have 308 plate appearances. We already know this guy's a low walk rate, right? He's a high contact rate guy. And so this year he comes in right now with a 13.6% strikeout rate, which is just phenomenal. But the thing that I think that's really cool about this is some people were kind of pessimistic towards power for a 21-year-old who has less than 500 plate appearances in the major leagues, who came in last year and hit 288, which is absolutely phenomenal in my opinion. So now he comes into the year last year at 308 plate appearances, and he had 12 barrels with a 4.9% barrel rate and a 37.6% hard hit rate. In just 22 plate appearances this year, Wander Franco already has three barrels with a 16.7% barrel rate and a 55.6% hard hit rate. Now, I don't think that he's going to continue with a 15%+ barrel rate all season. If he does, he's going to win a lot of leagues for people. But we already have one stolen base for him. He's got a 550 batting average, a 545 OVP, and an 800 slug. He's going to hit second against both-handedness of pitcher. Being that he is a switch hitter, I think that that's been the trend for the entire season, and I think that that's going to just stick moving forward. And if you got him, pat yourself on the back, because if we were drafting tomorrow, Wander Franco and Byron Buxton would be two of the highest or biggest movers, I should say, even though Buxton was already getting that juice. Love him. He will be a third-round pick next year if things kind of continue what they're doing right now.
Oh, Franco? I mean,
yeah, second, third round pick.
What if he hits 335 with, even 19 home runs and 100 runs scored? I mean, couldn't he be a second round pick? Especially, you'll have the narrative of, we saw maybe a little power spike towards the end. Maybe he's sort of that next helium guy, like kind of like Buxton was this year. It's possible.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, it's just yeah, I hope just these young people, right? I know that there's a lot of growing pains, but with some of them, they're not. There wasn't with Ronald Acuna Jr. There wasn't with Juan Soto. There wasn't with Fernando Tatis Jr. I think that that's the same with Wander Franco and Luis Robert. So party on.
Yeah, well, Byron Buxton, by the way, so I hope you got your shares early because the price went up, at least in NFBC leagues. I remember in my draft in Vegas, main event, he was taken 17th overall. And I was picking, I believe, 13th in that league and sitting at the table. And the guy at I was picking the middle of the draft. So I was seventh. And then the person drafting right after me, Tim Lilly, he was actually the main event leader through the early part of the season, happens to be in my league. And I remember he took Buxton at the on the way back of the second round. And he told me, "Hey, man, sorry, but he wasn't coming back to you. So, you know, my dreams of a late second round, you know, mid late second round Buxton wasn't happening." So, and then as draft season kind of continued, he wasn't making it past that first second turn. So pick 15, 16, there, it was quite frequently that you were seeing somebody just kind of snag him there. And it's wild to think about how he was going around 45 to 60 overall just a month, you know, 2 months ago. And then just that little bit that we saw in the spring of him mashing was enough for people to overlook the fact that the guy has never been healthy for a full season and just buying in for the potential of wonderness, right? And so if you're buying that at a fourth round price, of course, that's worth the risk. At this point, you already have three players on your team. If it's a 12-teamer, you might already have four or five players on your team by the time, you know, Buxton is there. But a first round pick, second round pick, it's a different story. There's a lot of risk here involved. You know, it is what it is, right? You get a full season out of Buxton, you're pretty sure you're going to get somebody who returns first round value. But yeah, obviously, God forbid something happens to him. It's, you know, we're talking a different tune. And then next year, you'll kind of be in the same situation where there'll be people that will be back in for the hope that he stays healthy, or are just out completely because it's been so many years that he's done this.
I made a grave mistake. Could have set the max in Vegas, the same draft weekend, same area, same situation you were in, but he fell all the way to the fourth round. I had, I believe, the fourth pick or what, something like that in the fourth round. And I ended up sticking to my plan with Chris Bryant. I probably wouldn't even be here talking fantasy baseball with you if Bryant didn't have a batting average 100 points higher right now. Yeah, if Byron Buxton stays healthy, yeah, he's looking like another league winner. I do have some exposure to him, but that's when I was drafting him, I think, in the fifth round of drafts earlier in the winter. And then why I passed up on him, my plan was Chris Bryant. But sometimes you need to change your plan, and that's a plan that I should have changed. I'm already realizing that that was a mistake, even with the injury profile that Buxton has. The upside is just far, far, far too much higher than Chris Bryant possesses. So mistake on my end. And then the other thing, you know, I was kind of, when you're in those live drafts, feels like a rookie mistake, even though I've been there for 7 years now. I was already expecting Buxton to be gone, and not that if I would have known, like someone would have went up to me and said, "Hey, Byron Buxton's still available right now in the fourth round, take him over Chris Bryant." I probably would have still went with Chris Bryant, to be honest with you, if we're rewinding. But yeah, there was a couple things. My plan was Chris Bryant, and I thought Buxton was just already off the board. You know, he wasn't my plan in the third, and then my plan in the fourth was Bryant, and so that's where I went. But yeah, I'm rooting Buxton on. I'm not going to be now because I missed out on the fourth, in the, you know, in a big league and with a max pick. I still have some exposure to him in a few leagues, and I'm all aboard for this dude to ball out and stay healthy. So let's go.
Yeah, coming up, they've got after they finish up with the Dodgers, the Twins go to Boston for four games, starts on Friday and actually ends on a Monday, and then they'll go to KC. So hopefully they'll be able to eat some pitching barbecue while they're there.
Yeah,
looking at four teams that we were expecting to be the WOAT, the absolute worst as far as offenses were concerned, three of those actually have been. Again, everything is small sample here. We're talking about, it's nothing, right? Five games of the season of a 162 game season is, I mean, how far have we been in this season? It's been 3%, 97% to go. So any overreaction, anything that you're reacting to is most likely an overreaction. But three of those teams have been the worst teams through the first stretch. That's Baltimore, scoring the least amount of runs in baseball thus far. The Arizona Diamondbacks, of course, and the Pittsburgh Pirates. No surprises there. My question to you is, the Oakland A's are kind of in a different trajectory. They've scored 21 runs over the last couple of games. They've, you know, they've been kind of picking on this the shoddy bullpen of Tampa. Their middle relievers coming in earlier than expected, especially when Luis Patino went down after one batter. So are you digging some of these guys? I mean, obviously, I don't think anyone's buying in on Elvis Andrus because he had a home run and had a big game. But some of these other guys, you know, Tony Kemp, Chad Pinder, Seth Brown, flashing some power in the middle of the lineup. You know, most of these guys are taken in 15 teamers. But in general, what do you think of this this offense? Is this just sort of a random flash of the pan taking advantage of bad pitching?
A couple of things. So you are going to get some volume from some of these guys, and we are seeing that this week. They have seven games. I mentioned it in the weekly hitting planner. If you look at the rankings, I kind of gave them all a little bit of a bump because for the most part, they play every day and they're playing seven games. There's no one to sit them for, really. And, you know, volume is king in this sport that we're playing in fantasy baseball in regards to offensive players. Looking at the combined team landscape of all these teams that you mentioned, starting with the A's, Patino goes down. They get a bullpen game there. And the Rays, especially knowing how they are, even when their team's in the middle of the summer and the pitchers are stretched out, they do some funky things. So at the beginning of the year, you're getting, you know, a little bit less of rope for some of these pitchers, and you are getting a susceptible bullpen at this point. And so I think the A's are taking advantage of it. And then with the Baltimore Orioles, yeah, they're bad. They lead the league right now in strikeout rate, which is just, I think, a trend that we're going to see continue. So if you're playing in DFS, feel free to just continue attacking them. They have a 30.9% strikeout rate, which is just absolutely brutal. Arizona Diamondbacks and the Pittsburgh Pirates. One thing I noticed about the Pirates is their low strikeout rate. It's at 22.1%. I think that was something similar to last year. So I know that we like to pick on teams that don't have a lot of overall talent and landscape, but when looking from a DFS perspective, I think that we might want to be a little bit tepid when trying to attack the Pittsburgh Pirates because they do make some contact. They do get on base. You know, they'll draw some walks and they don't strike out a lot. Their strikeout rate is only 22.1%. So I don't think any of these offenses are real, to answer your question. I don't like the overall talent or landscape of any of them. To be honest with you, the two best players out of all of them, I think, will come from Pittsburgh, actually, is Key Brian Hayes and Brian Reynolds. So,
yep.
I mean, I'm not looking to go to the free agency wire and scoop up any of these guys if, you know, on a certain week. But this week, though, like the A's, you know, seven games. And if these players, the starters, they play pretty much every day. So, if you do notice some of these guys are available and they do have a seven game week, then scoop them up and use that volume.
Yeah. And then just looking specifically at the Oakland A's roster, I think the one guy that is going to be pretty much universally rostered for the most part, as long as he's healthy, is Sean Murphy. He's their number three hitter. Might get traded at some point. I know we've heard some Frankie Montas to the White Sox rumors, but the rest of these guys are pretty much going to be streamed all season. And in 12 teamers, I mean, in the NFBCOC, Seth Brown is like 12% rostered. Chad Pinder's like 1%. I don't think a lot of people bought in on this week. They're more 15 team plays. Those guys are more like 80% plus rostered, not available in many 15 teamers. So, but yeah, obviously they have some power there. And then the rest of these guys are just going to be picked up and dropped a lot. Obviously we've seen Kevin Smith, who was drafted in the last five rounds of 15 teamers. He's already kind of losing a little bit of playing time. Last couple of games, he sat both days for Sheldon Neuse, former Oakland A minor league masher, and was on the Dodgers last year. He's actually funny because I brought him up to our buddy Scott Jenstad. I'm like, dude, you know me, I'm going to be on the Neuse train. I actually played him in DFS the other day when he hit his home run. And he's like, again, he just poo-pooed me. He's like, oh, Neuse sucks, man. Don't worry, he sucks. I'm like, nah, maybe not. But Anyway,
before we close out on them, they get 7 games next week again, right? We just talked about that volume, and they're facing 4 against Baltimore's pitching and then 3 against the Rangers. So I think maybe we could see those runs continue for another week. So keep smiling, Scott Jenstedt.
Oakland? Yes, that's right. They got the weekend series at Toronto, a little Baltimore, a little Texas. Yeah,
for the upcoming week, starting on Monday, April 18th. Yeah, it's a seven game week for them again. So back to back 7-game weeks.
Yeah, and you know what? Seeing Baltimore on the schedule for 4 and Texas, just looking at the schedule and already knowing that in my Fab article and your hitter planner, that is going to stand out for us, and we'll probably point it out. That could lead to some more activity than usual for Oakland guys. You might even see people in on Jed Lowry, what's dead may never die. So he's been hitting second and third. He's only played 2 of 5 games, but hitting second and third in the lineup as a DH when he's in the lineup.
There was something about him I read that they're kind of and you'll have to ask Scott about this. He'll know for sure, but he was coming in late or slow or something like that. So they were kind of easing him into the lineup. But yeah, when he has been in the lineup, he's hitting at the top of it. He already has a multi-hit effort, and he is only 4% rostered in the NFBC main event.
Mm-hmm. Another name, this is just random, but at some point there's going to be this hot stretch from Stephen Piscotty. I think he even stole a base the other day. He's been hitting 8th for the most part in the lineup. You might see him move up a little bit. There'll be a stretch when maybe that coincides with Seth Brown just being absolutely cold, and then you'll see Piscotty higher in the lineup. So again, with Fab, we're looking ahead to schedule. We're looking at potential signs of their plate appearances for us to get in on these guys. Because the thing is, you never want to pay market price. You don't want to get in with the masses. You want to be ahead of people. So just, you know, keep an eye out on these players. Grab them a week early when the schedule looks good. And otherwise, you'll be catching them on a 150 hitting week, and we don't want that.
I wish I would have known they were playing 14 of 14 games. I would have started adding all of them last week. That's why you got to keep looking the week ahead. It's always vital.
So any concern about, well, this might even be a different conversation than when we were putting the outline together yesterday, was is COVID. Is this something that we are going to have to start to worry about? Because I know it's been coming back in some places. But some alleviation here. It turns out Corey Kniebel, who we believed or who went on the COVID IL, he tested that came back this morning that he does not have COVID and he's going to be back in the lineup. I know there were a lot of assumptions on Tuesday, like, oh, COVID's coming back. Jordan Alvarez is hurt, not feeling well. A few other people, Trout was scratched with a stomach bug. He probably just, obviously probably ate some bad Orange County sushi, but I mean, is this even a thing at this point? I mean, can it hit the league at some point? If it does, it'll come in a storm. But the Kniebel being okay seems like perhaps not yet.
First and foremost, I'm glad that Kniebel is back. And that's great to see, right? We don't want to see anybody. I don't care if he's on free agency, if he's, the best player in baseball. I want to see these guys get a play. They're playing outdoors. Hopefully it isn't, but in the back of my head, there is still from the last 2 seasons, I still have this concern that on any given Sunday, as they say, you could lose somebody to the COVID IL. And if and when that happens, you need to have a backup plan in order. And for me, I'm glad that you brought this up because I've made a lot of mistakes this early season, Vlad. But I'm not worried yet because there's plenty of time to correct some of the things that I've made mistakes on. And one of them was I didn't have a second baseman in one of my main events, and I wanted
at
somebody
all?
That's it was Nick Solak, and he's like not playing against righties, so I cut him even after he hit a home run on Sunday. Again, he wasn't in the lineup yesterday facing a right-handed pitcher, so I wanted somebody that's going to be at least on the right side of the platoon. And you and I are talking about Robinson Cano, and then I got ahead of myself, and I ended up bidding like 5% on Cano, and he ended up going for less than 1%. I tweeted about it. I talk about my mistakes. It's good to look yourself in the mirror. And the reason why I kind of overbid, obviously, was because I wanted somebody that's going to be able to, if something were to happen to Brandon Lau, of course he's my second baseman, duh. Then I wanted to be able to plug somebody in that's going to at least get a little bit of volume. And I have the concerns about Solak right now because he's on the wrong side of the platoon. So I do want to have in place, similar to fantasy football, how often do we have a backup quarterback? Hardly ever. But with COVID, you kind of got to have one, because if you wake up on Sunday and you're unable to, you know, make a waiver claim or a free agency ad, depending on the league format, you're screwed and you need to have somebody in every spot. So I clearly want to have, you know, a round peg for a circle hole in each roster position because of COVID, especially. If we weren't having this, then maybe I would have just bit the bullet and said, screw it, I don't need a second baseman right now.
And we do want to talk about some closers, some of these impressive starting pitchers, and obviously a little look ahead to Fab. But real quick on Danny Jansen, just because it has sort of a deeper effect than what it actually is. But Danny Jansen was looking good and hitting really well, hitting for power, which is something we had always expected from him in those first few days. Unfortunately, he hit the IL on a Monday with an oblique issue. Obliques are never good. And unfortunately, it seems like it's going to be an extended absence. It's probably going to be a few weeks. And it's a particular bummer for most of us because in NFBC, person of intelligence. No, sorry. I don't want to offend people. You don't really carry a third catcher in NFBC. I mean, for the most part, because there are only seven backup slots. You know, there might be occasions where you need to eventually midseason, if you're holding a stud catcher, say Contreras is hurt and it's a short IL stint, then obviously you're keeping Contreras on your lineup. But I don't think most people draft three catchers just to carry a backup, because what's the backup plan? You lose Danny Jansen. Granted, you get some zeros, but those zeros might even end up being better than, like, you know, Roberto Perez or Martin Maldonado in your lineup hitting 120 for the week. So, but nevertheless, losing your catcher who's hitting for power and who's on the Blue Jays on a Monday sucks. But, you know, clearly I think in all formats, he is a drop, and we'll have to be looking for some catchers this week.
It's unfortunate. He hits in the best offense in all of baseball. He was finally looking like, I was kind of, a couple years ago, he started to get some steam as like this guy that was going to be a decent hitter as a catcher. He could potentially maybe even, provide a little bit of power, right? I think that we were kind of looking in on that for Danny Jansen, albeit a very small sample size. He already hit two home runs, had a 28.6% barrel rate, a 57.1% hard hit rate. You mentioned that he's a drop. I completely agree. The one thing I will say, though, and you need to write this down, put it on a post-it, slap it on your wall, your office, or whatever, is you need to monitor Danny Jansen each and every week. So every Sunday night, type in Danny Jansen, search, follow the beat reporters for the Toronto Blue Jays, and check his updates. Make sure to see where he's at in his progress. When does he start swinging a bat? When is he going to be doing this? And once you find out that Danny Jansen, let's say, is 10 days away or 2 weeks away, try and find that timing where you can add him. If you were a team like myself that drafts, let's say, Francisco Mejia and Joey Bart, maybe you end up cutting Francisco Mejia for Danny Jansen when the time comes, or even maybe you might not even have a catcher of those two, like Bart and Mejia. So if you're playing that streaming game with catchers, or if you're kind of on the fritz with one of your catchers, be sure to pounce on Danny Jansen when the time comes, because you'll be able to scoop him up on the cheap. And I think that he would be a really viable option for you as your catcher too. And you aren't going to have to draft him, and you can get him cheap and fab. So just continue to monitor him.
So some closer talk. I think anybody that is getting some saves early in the season is probably really happy. It's a category you want to get ahead of. You don't want to be in a position where your team has no closers, or you drafted a couple of guys that just didn't work out, or your stud closer isn't getting saves. Or at least when we saw Liam Hendricks blow that first one, I'm sure even though for the most part people aren't worried, you're still sort of digging in, like, is his velocity up? Is everything okay with him? But nevertheless, if you are gut lucky and got in on tons of Taylor Rogers, you got to be pretty happy. There was that one quick scare when he was traded to the Padres. It's like, what if he isn't the guy? You know, you had the assumptions of, oh, he's the main lefty in that pen, so maybe it's, you know, committee, and they did sign Robert Suarez. But Suarez, I think, showed right off the gate. He came in there, sure, a little bit of nerves in his first major league start, but he looked like Ricky Vaughn, just absolutely walked the park and got blasted. And then Taylor Rogers wasn't available for that game. He had just been traded to the team that morning of, but Taylor Rogers came in and mopped the floor the very following day with a save opportunity. He ended up getting another one, and I think even a third. So pretty much the clear-cut closer, and looks good in that San Diego uniform. And then actually Robert Suarez ended up having a good outing on Tuesday night, came in there, had a clean inning with a strikeout or two, I believe. So Taylor Rogers, love it. And then real quick on Jordan Romano, is this guy the GOAT or what? Can he be like the number one closer? I understand there's Hader and Hendricks in the mix, but is he like top three right there with these guys?
Yeah. If we were drafting tomorrow and knowing what we know today, unfortunately, we don't get to Romano and Rogers, Taylor Rogers, that is, should be thrusted into that Edwin Diaz, Emmanuel Clase, Raisel Iglesias area. I think that, or actually probably even thrusted up just into that Hendricks range or Hader range. Now that we know Romano is definitely and certainly the closer, which I think some of us probably should have known that anyways with some of the talent that they have behind him. But now, you know, seeing is believing for a lot of people, and we're getting that with Romano. So yeah, him. And then if we knew, some people were buying in, Matt Modica was scooping up Taylor Rogers in a lot of leagues, eighth round, ninth round, even in this winter. The concern with me was Rocco Baldelli, right? And how he manages the Minnesota Twins coming from the Tampa Bay Rays tree. Phil Dussault and I had a little bit of a conversation on that over Twitter about, you know, Colomé was kind of the closer, and then he slipped, and then there was somebody else, and then they slipped. So it was, there was some sustainability there, but then there was some skills and injury issues along the way that kind of made the closer role look a little fickle in Minnesota. But now knowing that Taylor Rogers is in San Diego, if I would have known that, I would have drafted him just behind Edwin Diaz, you know, but we didn't know that. So it's crazy.
Giovanni Gallegos, he came in and got the easy close the game out on Tuesday night against the Kansas City Royals. Was 35-year-old manager Ollie Marmol lying to us, or I don't think he's not lying. He just he brought his best guy in there. I think he still kind of probably wants to keep the pen a little fluid, but at the end of the day, I think that is his best guy. Obviously I think Ryan Helsley might come in and get some opportunities here and there. They got Nick Whitgren, Genesis Cabrera, but looks like it's Gallegos is going to be the lead here, right? Worth the pick.
Absolutely. He's the best pitcher in that bullpen, and it isn't even close. And then when you look at Whitgren and Genesis Cabrera, they're all right. They have some experience late in games, but it remains to be seen if Marmol is the Bruce Arians of fantasy baseball. So as of now, yeah, you should feel pretty good. The op went to, it went to the right guy, and hopefully it just continues to be that way with Gallegos. If not, I hope that they end up getting burned. How about that?
Fair enough. Messy situations in the Twins bullpen. We got Jorge Alcala just hit the injured list with right elbow inflammation. At some point, people were thinking he was the most talented guy in this bullpen, not named Taylor Rogers before he got traded. Obviously, it's clear that it looks like it's Joan Duran who was hitting, 103, 104? I mean, this dude looks like a beast. And then, of course, there's Tyler Duffy in the mix who blew the first save of the season. They might be looking to showcase him for a trade, so maybe they give him some save ops. So wanted to talk about the Twins and a couple other messy bullpens. Just your quick thoughts. San Francisco, where you've had save opportunities getting traded away there with Kaplering, Camilo Duvall. Then you had you have Tyler Rogers and McGee, the veterans there, of course. And then Dominic Leone coming in for the save. And then finally, Cincinnati Reds, Lucas Sims coming back from a rehab assignment soon. And then you've got Art Warren, Tony Santillan on top of that committee there. So those three teams, any names stick out to you?
Yeah, I would not go out on a limb and start cutting Jake McGee or Camilo Duvall. I think that we need to kind of get a little bit more time to see how Kapler's going to shake things out. We got late helium on Jake McGee because he stated that as of today, which isn't today, when he said that it was late March, that Jake McGee was going to be the San Francisco Giants closer as of today. But that was in late March. And then we saw Duvall blow it, was that on a Jazz Chisholm home run. And Jake McGee wasn't the one pitching. He pitched the eighth inning, or, you know, he didn't get the save off, long story short. And then they both came back on back-to-backs. Neither, I believe, was even in a save op. And then Leone ended up getting a save for the Giants. Yeah, don't cut Duvall or McGee just yet. I would kind of play the wait and see. If you want to stash him on the bench for the week, go right ahead for the upcoming week. But I certainly wouldn't just, you know, cut to the chase and cut either of them. And then in the other, what was the other team landscape you were asking
Twins
about?
Twins and Cincy.
Twins, yeah. If you aren't following Mark Cerebro, who is an NFBC Hall of Famer, you can go check out his Twitter feed because he's pretty damn adamant at Gecko Industries that Yohan Duran is the closer for the Minnesota Twins, in quotes, a league winner closer, a league winning closer. So if you follow him on Twitter, then you'll believe that Duran is the closer now until the end of the season, and he's going to blow everybody out the water. And it certainly could be that way. And it's starting, the path is beginning to be paved that way. As we've gotten an injury there with Alcala, Pagan's still there though, too. And you mentioned Duffy and potentially, trying to swing him with some trade bait. Thielbar is pretty good, but he's a lefty and they don't have many lefties in that pen. So if you do have Duran or if Duran's available, that's the guy that I would certainly want to target. He does have the best stuff in the pen. And it looks like he's trending in the direction to be the closer, but it does remain to be seen there. And what was the last one? I'm sorry. I'm just
I was just going to say, by the way, for those, you're talking about Mark Cerebro Gecko. He's also been a troll before Twitter days in the Twitter, in the NFBC message boards, selling up players he doesn't like. So you never know his full intent there. So
I will say he did win the bids on Duran. He did.
So he's changed his tune.
But he also does that though. Hi, Mark, if you're listening, if he gets in on a guy, then he'll start to kind of give himself some recency bias and like kind of, pump himself up in the mirror a little bit and then start to tweet about real positive things and trends to kind of make himself feel good about the acquisition as well. So yeah, there's two sides of the coin for when analyzing things in Gecko's world.
Indeed. Sims, you think he can come in and take that job? Is it Art Warren? I know you've got some serious Art Warren stands there.
I think it would be Sims, just because we have seen Bell try and give him that opportunity in the past. He does have the best stuff in the bullpen. He will be coming back soon. I'm trying to scamper over to the OCs because he's only available actually in one NFBC main event league. So if you are in the main event, he's 98% rostered. This is Lucas Sims that Vlad and I are talking about. That will change rather shortly with that, the rehab outing. And I do believe that he will be the closer. And then looking at the RotoWire online championship, he's 84% rostered there. So in 16% of leagues, Lucas Sims is still available. If he is available in your league, I would look to scoop him up.
Some other really quick trends. I think it's pretty clear. Daniel Bard is, he's shutting down doors. I like the John Fish, smashing the door on somebody, on somebody's face GIF that he's been using for Daniel Bard, who now has what I think 3 saves. David Robertson locked down his second save on Tuesday, and pretty clear he's running away with the job. If you have not dropped Rowan Wick, go ahead and do so. And then Jorge Lopez, despite all the bad things I said about him, I do think it does seem apparent that if they're going to have somebody close games out whenever those rare opportunities pop up, considering he is better in relief appearances, just don't let the man start. I think you may be onto something there. And then real quick on Boston, I mean, that's just a messy situation. I don't know what the heck's going to happen. The interesting quote you saw from Jake Diekman, who like doesn't even really, he's like, do I want to be the closer? No, or I don't know. Did you see that quote from him?
No, I didn't, but I'm a big fan of him. He has the same illness as my wife. He has Crohn's disease, and I know that that's kind of harnessed him in the past, but seeing the waves and struggles that my wife has gone through and then being able to have the proper procedure done, getting on the right medication, it seems like that's been going on. I don't want to speak for, Diekman's health, but knowing a little bit about Crohn's disease, it seems like as of right now, obviously there could be a flare up, but he's healthy. He's feeling good. And he is a good pitcher. We have seen some upside from him in the past. He did get the save opportunity. It's a little fickle right now with Matt Barnes. I wouldn't cut Barnes just yet, would look to add. No, yeah, don't cut him. But I would look to add Jake Diekman if possible. He's only rostered in 9% of main events. So I'm assuming he's pretty much virtually available in a 12-team league, and he should be acquired this weekend.
Yeah, he's the lone lefty there near that top group. But yeah, a reporter asked him after that game on primetime, do you want to be a closer? He said, I don't really give two shits. The reporter asked him, can I quote you on that? He said, yeah, do it. I really don't care.
Out of Abe. I like it. Especially yeah. with someone with Crohn's disease, uh-huh. no pun intended.
And then Garrett Whitlock, obviously, man, that dude is shut down. He stepped in after Rich Hill and finished up the game, basically. So Rich Hill came in, pitched four and a third for Boston on Tuesday. And then Garrett Whitlock didn't give up a single hit, few strikeouts there in four innings. Kind of really fits that role there nicely. So my guess is I think it's still going to be Barnes as long as he's healthy. Him and Diekman might get some opportunities depending if, you know, some lefties coming up. And then, of course, Hansel Robles is always sneaking around there. Finally, Anthony Bender, he's been on one. He's been on a mini bender here. Not looking too good. He was seeing some helium in main events. And yeah, he's now, I think he's blown a save. He lost a game yesterday on Tuesday, Anthony Bender. And then obviously they traded for Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott before the season started. And then of course, Dylan Floro is on the way back. I think Floro is somebody who probably is maybe more Mattingly speed, just a nice, safe, solid guy who can lock things down. So if Dylan Floro is available at any of your leagues and you need saves, I think you need to take a long, hard look at him.
Yes. So I think there's a couple things to take from this. Even though Bender hasn't looked like we would have hoped if you have drafted him to get those early save ops, the great news is he's gotten those save ops and he's getting the ninth inning high leverage spots, even if it, you know, in a tie game, it was yesterday, I believe. The bad news is obviously he's come away with one save opportunity. He's blown one save opportunity. And then the other one that it wasn't a save opportunity, he's given up a run. One of my good friends that I grew up with is one of Bender's friends and strength and conditioning coaches. So the plan is to actually get him on the pod this off season. And I'm not joking about that. The other thing though, is Don Mattingly, even results excluded, right? Or included, I'm sorry. He continues to give that rope and leash to whoever his closer is at that current time. And we're seeing that with Bender, even in, you know, the ebbs and flows, the highs and lows, he continues to just roll Bender out there. So I think that we could continue seeing that until Floro comes back. The good news is, as you mentioned, with Bender kind of scuffling a little bit, it does look like Mattingly probably will go just back to Dylan Floro, who was that guy at the end of last season. He was one of his guys in the bullpen for the Los Angeles Dodgers when they were there together. So I think that that formidity is likely going to happen. And the good news overall of that is, right, the leash and the rope that Mattingly gives. So if and when Floro comes back, gets the role, I think he sticks with the role.
Mm-hmm. And of course, needs to obviously not have his own struggles, because then Mattingly will end up having himself quite a huge headache.
And we can't poo-poo on Bender too much, because he's a friend of the pod.
He's a friend of the pod, and we've been going after him. I didn't get as much as I would like to have, and sometimes those things work out, but we'll see. It's a very, very, very long season. I did want to touch on some early fab, and we don't have much time here, so going to run through a list of some of these starting pitchers, and for both the good and the bad, just coming off one start for the most part, and I'll throw out some names and just get your sort of overlying thoughts or anybody that stands out. One thing that we do have in common, and now for the second year in a row, we've been tracking velocity upticks and pitch mix changes very closely again this offseason. And what a surprise, the guys that have increased velocity, especially some substantially from the previous season and looked good in spring, have all been crushing it. On Tuesday night alone, Alex Cobb of the San Francisco Giants, 10 strikeouts, hitting 95 for the first time ever. Jesus Luzardo, 12 strikeouts against the Angels, made Ohtani look silly a couple times. Seattle's rookie Matt Brash looked as good as advertised. The baby goat Tyler McGill, stud teammate Chris Bassett, looked amazing, just phenomenally sharp in his first start in the Mets uniform. Alek Manoah could be the best potentially from this Blue Jays group. It's not the best, easiest division to pitch in. He made the Yankees look silly with a bunch of scoreless innings. And then that Astro staff, straight fire, all those guys, everyone except for Luis Garcia, their top three guys all went at least six innings, which was nice to see, or at least five innings, 75 pitches, which, you know, that was nice to see. And then finally, you say Manoah, I say Manea in a Padres uniform. let's call the whole thing off.
The thing I want to take away from this, and I know that we had some struggles this off season in the spring training about getting velocity reports from some camps. When we saw this last year, right? One of the big examples I'm going to give for that increase in velo was Carlos Rodon. We're now seeing that trend again this year, but he balled out last year. I think when we see that and we start to see the early drafts right after that on Twitter and we see draft boards, we lose our minds and we go, oh my God, look where he jumped to. Well, I was getting him in my draft champions in round 9, round 10, round 11, round 12, or wherever it was. And then you see, you know, the increased velo on Twitter and the videos from Rod Freeman or from one of the pitcher list guys. And then they shoot up. For the most part, it works, right? Like Alex Cobb. Okay, great. That's looking awesome. Carlos Rodon again this year. He signs with the Giants. Okay, they must believe in him. They're a great organization. Look what he did. Jesus Luzardo, pump and gas, increased usage of the curveball, getting an absolute insane amount of whiffs. It's all positive. And I think one of my flaws is, even if I'm in on these guys before we get these reports, I see these reports and I get pissed off and I get mad because the stock or the value or whatever you want to call it, their draft capital increases. And then I get upset and I'm like discouraged, like, no, now they're not worth it because, you know, people are paying too much for them. And I end up simmering off of some of these guys because I was smart in the winter and now it's just too rich. I think I need to correct that a little bit and continue to buying in. If I like these guys and they're getting better and the velocity's better, I think it's a flaw from my draft perspective.
Well, you know what? No, I mean, not quite, because in a couple of those cases, like Alex Cobb and Jesus Luzardo were easily available, I would say 240 to 260 overall for the most part in January, February drafts. And I know we had been getting in on those guys at those prices in DCs. The thing is, when that entire market shifted come main event, like we looked at those first two boards, all the pitching moved up. Like the pitchers that were going in the 150s, 130s, like the pitching like Logan Gilbert, Luis Garcia, Sonny Gray that were going 150, 160, we're now going 110, 120, right? The entire market had shifted up. So what that meant was those Lizardos, Cobbs all moved from the 250s to the high hundreds, like 180, 190, along with all of those guys. You started seeing Alex Wood, Desclafani and Clevinger, all these guys started getting pushed up along with it. So, you know, it was a full market shift and you know, we still did buy in at some point. But yeah, of course, if all of a sudden there is some bias and it makes sense, it's natural. I wouldn't call it quite a mistake. If you're getting a 17th round Jesus Luzardo, all of a sudden the price is ninth. There isn't this intrinsic bias. They're like, man, I don't want to pay up on that. I already got my shares. Let me find better value. Let me find the new Jesus Luzardo in the 15th round if there is one.
I think the biggest one for me is Carlos Rodon. You know, I was big time in on him and then he gets the bump after he signs with San Francisco. And I know it was a good landing spot and I know good things were going to come. And then I see him get drafted in the sixth round. I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I still have exposure. Like you said, you know, that's mm-hmm. why some of us draft early.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's the perfect example of like, I basically felt like I was helping set the Taylor Rogers market because I was drafting on every team. He's one of my top four most exposed to guys. And then in the main events, I just didn't land any. He was going 70, 80 overall. And I even had him pegged for around there. There was one spot where it was him or Corey Knebel. I was going to pop one of them early, I think like 70, 90 overall. And I did. I had to make a decision between the two. I took Knebel. I was hoping Rogers would make it back. I was going to pop two closers in a row. It just didn't happen. So amongst all my shares of Rogers, I don't have him on any main events, which, you know, it sucks when you see him getting all those saves, but hey, it is what it is. Market changes, market shifts. Speaking of, how's the market going to shift on Michael Lorenzen for the Angels, former reliever, former hitter, former all these different things? Beautiful six. I think thought he would go six innings, seven strikeouts, nearly any hits against, of course, you know, the Miami. I was going to call them the Dolphins, but what do you think of Lorenzen?
I've kind of always been a fan. And now we're getting to see the actual, he's finally stretched out. Like how many years have been waiting for him to be stretched out? And we got that. I think the cool part was the no walks. He struggled with walk rates in the past. His career walk rate is 9.6%, albeit one outing, but he went six innings without allowing one walk. And when you do that, striking out 35% of the people. Easy math gives you 35% K minus walk rate, which is pretty damn sexy. They're going to need him in this rotation. I know it's a six-man rotation right now, but they do have some guys that, including himself, that haven't, you know, gone 150 plus innings pitched. There's been pitchers in the rotation that have a profile of past injuries. So they're going to give him the burn, all the burn that he can take. And I believe it was Michael Simeone had him on the SP Streamer podcast last offseason. Some of the years are blending in, but it was a great podcast, and just talking about Lorenz and how he wants to be a starter, how he wants to be pushed. He's a full throttle, like he wants to push it to the limit guy, and he's getting these opportunities now. So please stay healthy, because the Angels are the right team for him to be on, because mm-hmm. he will get those opportunities. He's only available, or he is available, I should say, in he's available in 62% of NFBC main event leagues.
Yep. He'll be a popular bid target. We're gonna
two-step too.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing.
Because of the six man. Yeah. One day off. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the Angels only have six games that week, so yeah, the way it would shake up would be just one single start.
Scratch that.
Let's end the show here on some guys that we're going to be looking at a little bit early on in free agency bidding. There were some guys that we some stud pitchers that we were let's table those guys to next week. Let's see how Shane Bieber performs in his third start. His velocity was up slightly last game. Julio Urias. And then the trio of Milwaukee guys. Let's give you a week to simmer over that. Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. So we can touch on those guys next week. But early Fab guys, I think one of the very clear things are in 15-teamers, people are going to be pretty much over Kevon Biggio. Santiago Espinal just kind of looks like a lot better of an overall hitter. So I think he's in the mix. And then Jose Siri, I wonder, 5-for-11. He started 3 of 5 games, but this was only against left-handed hitters. Obviously, he's a specialist, a platoon guy against lefties. But, I mean, could he earn more playing time? I mean, the kid looks legit, no?
Yeah, he does, and I think that there's a possibility. Both of these hitters are actually available, pretty widely available, even in main events. And then with the Biggio, how do you think he gets cut pretty much across the board? He's 94% in the main event.
Well, yeah, I think people are going to be over him for the most part. I mean, he now hasn't started any of the last three games. Of course, two lefties are part of those last three games, but the last time they faced a righty, it was Espinal in the lineup. He's been starting at second base, a little better defensively, a little better, like sort of overall contact skills. I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm in a tough spot. I obviously have a little bit of Biggio drafting at the end of drafts, and I think he'll still mix in, he'll still play, but it's hard to like start him and trust him. And if there are other corner infielders out there, it's worth a look. And then with Espinal, keep in mind, he's third base eligible. He's going to earn second base eligibility pretty soon. That's something that Biggio would have been on path for. But yeah, both of these guys will have second base eligibility eventually.
Back to Siri. Have you asked Siri how many stolen bases that Jose Siri could get if he gets this kind of burn that he's getting?
Siri told me she does not speak about her family.
You know, it's kind of weird, because I know sometimes you have these dreams and you'll wake up and you'll tweet like, oh, I had a gut feeling of blah, 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 blah. I dreamt about Jose Siri last night. You call it what you want, but I was like kind of in a dream scampering for him, and he wasn't available in leagues, and I was kind of sweating it, thinking I was a week late. So if he's available, maybe give him a shot this week if you have the need for speed. I think we all always have the need for speed, and I think he could chip in there just a bit. He had 24 stolen bases last year in AAA, and then he had 49 plate appearances with the Astros in the majors last year, and he had 3 stolen bases there. So he had 27 stolen bases in minors and majors combined, playing on the Houston Astros, great offensive lineup. And this is a guy that gets on base. So gets on base, plays for the Astros, give him the opportunity, steal some bases, giddy up. With the pitchers, before we get out of here, yeah, I'm concerned about Shane Bieber. Shout out to Rob Silver. I think that he called him his Shane Bieber, basically Zach Greinke now, which is really funny. Jose Urias, I'm going to give just a little bit more patience to. Yeah, it looked really bad, but some of these pitchers, not just Urias, we did see have lack of command, have a little bit of dip in velo. I know that his was extreme. It was 3 ticks down. This was in Coors Field. The defense didn't help in the first inning if you were watching that game. Chris Taylor botched something that extended the inning. And, you know, Urias did have a very, very long 2021 season, including the playoffs there for him. I know some people had concerns like that was going to trickle over into this season, which very well may be the conditions that we're in. But I'm going to temper the getting worried about Julio Urias at this point. I think that he could have been just enjoying his offseason, having far too much ceviche and tequila in Mexico. So let's temper that. But Shane Bieber, right, we've now seen two starts in a row with the velo down. The RPMs are down significantly. I believe it was like 400 RPMs on the curveball, which isn't great. I'm going to be concerned about that. The Brewers pitchers, I'm not concerned about. It was really cold. It was wet. It was snowing in Chicago. Yeah, I think Shane Bieber would be the one that I'm concerned about the most.
And then just kind of finishing things off on the fab end, 12 team guys that are going to be available in at least 25% of 12 teamers, at least in NFBC, could be more so in others, but keep an eye on obviously Austin Nola, who has been hitting in all over the place for San Diego, but even leadoff for them on opening day. He's available nearly 30% of the leagues. Brandon Nimmo leading off for the Mets because he had a little bit of an injury issue heading into the beginning of the season. He was even dropped in some spots, so make sure you scoop him up where you can. Kyle Wright, the red-hot Kyle Wright, another spring darling. Finally, maybe, is this the year? 25% available. And Luis Arraez and Brandon Marsh, a couple of guys that we need to be looking at in lineups. Make sure that they're not available in your 15 teamers. Make sure you scoop them up. Mackenzie Gore, will he or will he not come in there and get the start? How is Mr. Blake Snell's hip doing? So another thing to keep an eye on. Zach Thompson, he's got a couple of starts this week, or maybe the second one will get pushed back for Pittsburgh. People may not be that interested, but somebody to keep an eye on for 15 teamers. And then finally, somebody that actually I was at odds with most sharp people in NFBC, a few people that I talked about were getting ready to drop Jordan Hicks. And I'm not dropping him. I have, this is again, just 15 teamers. I'm looking at the fact that, yes, I understand short outings coming up here. He's going to be a little bit before he ramps up to five. I understand the velocity may drop a little bit if he's now going from reliever to starter, but there's just a feeling that I have, as long as I don't have any other guys that I absolutely must drop and I don't have too many snashes, I'm still holding on to Jordan Hicks, and I have hope that he's going to be a good starter for the Cardinals.
Well, I cut him in two of my 15 team leagues last week, so there you go. You're probably right. He'll end up being good. He piggybacked and looked pretty good and got the win yesterday, so I would actually be more intrigued with him if he continues in that role. Give me 3 to 4 innings of piggybacking.
Yeah, and I mean, that I think was, they had the rain out the day prior, and I sure. think he was kind of scheduled for that game. So I still think that he'll get there, and I don't think it'll be that far.
No, but I would give me one less inning, right? Like, how great is he going to be 5-plus innings to get you a win versus if he was, mm-hmm. you know, better in a 3-to-4 inning facing that lineup, you know, after they've already been churned and burned through who was it yesterday? Dakota Hudson, I think. But anywho, yeah. Let me give one person before we get out of here, since you got to name all the cool cats this week. In RotoWire Online Championship 12-team leagues, he's available in 30%, and that is Merrill Kelly. He's going to get a two-step, one on the road against the Washington Nationals, and then one at home against the New York Mets. He had an increased velo to 93 miles per hour in his first outing. He only went 4 innings, but he had 7 strikeouts. And he had a 36% CSW. So I think if he's available and you're looking to add some volume to your pitching next week, go ahead and look to add Merrill Kelly. That's it, right, buddy? We're out of here.
That's it. That's it. So we will be back next week. Look forward to talking to you guys. For Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.